Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing nearly $9 billion in municipal bond assets. Details at putnam.com. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
This is going to be one of those days that lingers in the mind for a while. That's going to come up in conversations that start, you remember when? Today, though, it's all about what happened, why, and where we go from here. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build stronger customer relationships through email marketing. ConstantContact.com. And by Angie's List, providing first-hand consumer reviews on local service like plumbers, painters, movers, and now doctors. Details at AngiesList.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ryssdal. It is Monday, today the 15th of September. Good to have you here. Like anybody who does a lot of public speaking, Henry Paulson knows it's best to start things off with a joke. So the Treasury Secretary gave it his best shot today when he stepped to the podium at the White House.
Good afternoon, everyone, and I hope you all had an enjoyable weekend. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it would have been fine except for that nervous laugh there at the end, don't you think? But really, who can blame the guy for a little bit of stress? Arguably, it was his decision last week not to bail out Lehman Brothers that set off the scramble yesterday, a last-minute search for a handout or a buyout. Among Lehman employees outside the company's headquarters in Midtown Manhattan this morning, sentiment was mixed.
Well, it felt like they were using Lehman as an example. That's just my opinion.
I don't think the government made a mistake at all. I think they had to draw a line, and they drew a line. And we had 6 months to fix this problem, and we didn't do it. So I think it's the fault of our senior management.
While I'm biased, I think it's kind of crappy that when it came time to saving Lehman, the government really kind of backed down, and I think we'll see the ripple effects as a result of it.
And now there are two. Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley are the last of the big Wall Street investment banks standing. Bear Stearns, you remember, was dispatched back in March. Lehman said in the middle of the night last night it is set to file Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Merrill Lynch, as you know, has been snapped up by Bank of America. Marketplace's Bob Moon is here to walk us through things. Hiya, Bob.
Hey, Kai.
But really, I mean, you sigh, but it could have been worse.
Yeah, it was not Black Monday. It could have been a lot worse. It may sound strange to say when the Dow was only down close to 500 points and only sank around 4.5%, but it really could have been worse.
Why wasn't it, though?
Well, the markets hate uncertainty, you remember, and there's a lot less unknown out there today. Experts have been saying for many, many months now that we needed clarity in the markets, and we finally got some today. Investors finally ran out of patience with Lehman. The firm took too long to get its balance sheet in order. It still had $50 billion in risky mortgage-related investments on the books. Then it reported the worst loss in its history last week. And with the bankruptcy filing today and the surprise sale yesterday of Merrill Lynch, we got some clarity over the weekend about where things stand now. So that helped put kind of a floor under the market.
Clarity is great and all, but here's something that is still, frankly, a little murky. Why is it that Bear Stearns back in March was considered too big to fail? The chairman of the Fed said basically that, but Lehman Brothers is not.
Well, you remember how surprising the Bear Stearns move was. There's a school of thought here now that there was plenty of warning and there was plenty of time for investors to get their ducks in a row, their act together about Lehman's problems. You have longtime market watchers out there who argue that this is going to shake things up at first, but then we're going to see an eventual adjustment process as these losses distribute themselves across the market. And you can also read between the lines here that the Treasury and the Fed decided the markets have adjusted since Bear Stearns. In fact, some supporters of that view say that there's no better evidence of that than the surprise sale of Merrill Lynch to Bank of America. Merrill effectively cleaned up its books and essentially it took care of the situation itself.
You're not really telling me that all the bad stuff's behind us, are you?
Not at all. The fallout's going to be really profound here. Will the bank profits take a hit? Absolutely. Is this going to take a lot more time to play out? No question about that. This is the result of bad decisions, Kai, that were made back as far as the 80s, and it's still going to take a long time to unwind all that. The trick is doing it gradually without shocking the system, but not so slow that you really create this kind of water torture effect.
Mm-hmm. The Fed meets tomorrow. They're going to talk about interest rates, and obviously everybody's going to be looking at that very closely. I wanted to ask you, though, about the companies that are still left, the ones that are getting bigger, the Bank of America's, mm-hmm. the Goldman Sachs's. Aren't we now setting ourselves up for another round of too big to fail?
There is concern about that. You know, Bank of America gobbles up Merrill Lynch and it becomes even bigger. And don't forget that Lehman Brothers had a very big closet and there are still lots of shoes in there to drop. Let me give you a case in point there. Today's bankruptcy filing lists the biggest single creditor as a Tokyo-based bank, Aozora Bank. It's on the hook for a $463 million bank loan. Well, it turns out Aozora may be based in Tokyo, but it's actually controlled by Cerberus Capital Management, the big U.S. private investment firm. Now, Cerberus issued a statement today that its exposure is really significantly less than Lehman's balance sheet might indicate because it's protected by what it calls risk management instruments. Well, guess what they are?
Yeah.
They are essentially these exotic insurance policies that others are going to have to cover now if they can afford it.
Funny you should mention that because that is where we are going next. Insurance Marketplace's senior business correspondent, Bob Moon. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Guy.
Bob got us going into insurance there, and that is what Wall Street is focusing on now, specifically the American International Group, or AIG. It is the world's largest insurance company, and it, too, is being torn apart by losses related to the subprime mortgage meltdown. AIG, as I mentioned, is an insurance company, so its problem is the policies it wrote protecting other institutions against losses. It got some breathing room today, courtesy of the state of New York. Governor David Paterson said AIG is going to be allowed to borrow billions of dollars from its subsidiaries. But the question out there on Wall Street is whether AIG is going to survive the week to enjoy that money, and if it doesn't, then what happens? Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson has the story from New York.
AIG sells insurance to more than 70 million customers worldwide. It got into trouble because one of its divisions insures against losses in capital markets. They're much harder to predict than losses due to, say, weather or a fire.
They took on risks that they just didn't understand.
That's Don Vickrey of Gradient Analytics. He says while insurers can easily determine potential damages from, say, hurricanes,
the structured finance market is relatively newish, and unfortunately, there was not enough data to properly model the risk.
Losses in mortgage-related securities have brought AIG crashing down. Its stock is down 80% this year. Its credit rating has also fallen, and that's made it more difficult to borrow the money it needs. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson held a press conference today at the White House. He sounded reluctant to step in and help.
What is going on right now in New York has got nothing to do with any bridge loan from the government. What's going on in New York is a private sector effort.
Paulson wants other Wall Street institutions to lend to AIG. Matthew Koffler of Clover Capital Management says allowing AIG to collapse is unthinkable.
When you see a company like AIG start to slam into the wall, it has a negative effect on confidence, and confidence is absolutely crucial to the credit markets.
Confidence in AIG is already plummeting. Its stock value is now less than half what it was this morning. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
The shorthand is to say that the collapse of Lehman Brothers is the biggest Wall Street disaster in decades, which would be right, except that Lehman doesn't really live on Wall Street anymore. Like a lot of other financial firms, Lehman moved out of Lower Manhattan after the attacks of September 11th. It had a trading floor in the North Tower that day. A couple of years ago, it opened a fancy new building just north of Times Square, and it fit right in, lighted wall displays flashing on and off 24 hours a day. That wasn't quite enough to put the building on the official tourist map of New York, but today's events seem to have changed all that, as Sally Herships reports.
It's not often that an investment bank gets the kind of attention reserved for rock stars, but the world's press staked out the Lehman Brothers building today. They were joined by throngs of tourists. Lehman employees had to fight their way out to the street.
It's reminding me of September 11th all over again, people posing in front of, like, ruins that are still smoking. And, you know, it's just... You know, I understand it's sensational, but, you know, it's really disrespectful and it's really insensitive.
This woman, along with the other Lehman employees I spoke to, didn't want their names on the radio, but all said they were upset by the news that the government let Lehman fail.
I wouldn't have even taken the risk. I would have bailed Lehman out. I mean, I won't even talk about what we spend in a week in Iraq, but, you know, given the risks involved, this could be a huge mistake.
Not everyone thought the government should get involved.
I don't think the government is at fault here. I think this is our doing and the industry's doing.
This employee seemed a little more understanding.
You know, this is how the market works. This is how the market works, you know, like, so everybody was having a party and they were all caught naked. What can you do?
I asked the Lehman staffers the question that everyone is asking now. What's next?
I think get some lunch, catch our breath.
That's a good question. I don't know. Look for a job.
With thousands of other bankers on the street looking for jobs, they may be looking at a different career altogether. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
When you really stop and think about what's happened the past 24 hours, a 500-point drop on the Dow almost seems like we're getting off easy. We will have the details when we do the numbers. Obviously, there's no way for us to know now what the net effect of the events of this weekend are going to be. Surely, they will be fodder for authors and analysts for decades. But commentator and business historian John Steele Gordon says it was all bound to happen.
What Wall Street and the financial authorities do now will determine whether this day is long remembered. After a crash, liquidity is the key to reversing the situation, and the Federal Reserve, the bank of last resort, is the key to liquidity. In 1987, it flooded the street with money, and the market soon recovered. In 1929, the Fed did nothing. In 1930, the federal government raised taxes, a disastrous mistake in a slowing economy. And that year as well, Wall Street refused to help a bank it could have saved. That touched off a wildfire of failure throughout the American banking system. The Bank of the United States wasn't well run. Some of its managers later went to jail. But it was a very large bank, the fourth largest depository bank in New York, with 450,000 depositors, most of them middle and working class Jews from the Garment District. That's why it was known sneeringly as the Pants Pressers Bank. The New York State authorities needed a temporary $30 million loan from the Wall Street Titans to save the state chartered bank. That way, the authorities could have engineered a merger with three other solid institutions. The Wall Street banks, led by J.P. Morgan, flatly refused. The head New York banking regulator pleaded for help, warning that they were making the most colossal mistake in the banking history of New York. When the Bank of the United States failed on December 11, 1930, the public panicked and the American banking system shuddered. People flocked to withdraw their money from other banks. In turn, the banks called in loans and sold assets in order to stay liquid. In that month alone, over 300 banks around the country failed. Will the failure to rescue Lehman Brothers cause a similar reaction? Well, I'm an historian, and that's above my pay grade.
John Steele Gordon's most recent book is called An Empire of Wealth. Take a minute to send us your thoughts on the news of today or anything else you hear on the program. Our website is marketplace.org. Click on that link that says Contact. Yes, it's a shame that Lehman's out of business on a whole lot of levels. And yeah, you feel bad for people who've lost their jobs. But unless I miss my guess, when a lot of people first heard the news today, their first thoughts went something like this. What about my money? Would it be safer under the mattress? I don't know. The short answer for now is no. Marketplace's Tess Vigeland is here to explain all that. Hiya, Tess.
Hi, Kai.
Let's get to it. How worried ought you be, starting with Lehman Brothers, I suppose, if you have money there?
Well, first of all, you should know that the Securities and Exchange Commission has literally gone in and set up shop at Lehman to make sure that your money doesn't kind of magically get moved to some other part of the company. This is important because you want to make sure that the wall stays firm between Lehman's corporate investment side and their retail investment side, which is, you know, you and me, if we're their customers. The SEC says that it is monitoring these accounts very closely to make sure nothing funny is going on. And also, the brokerage part of Lehman's giant banking company was not part of today's bankruptcy filing. It's still looking to possibly sell this broker-dealer operation as well as its investment management unit, which manages client money, regular people's money.
Well, what if I've got brokerage accounts with Lehman? Am I covered there?
Right now, you should be able to do everything that you were able to do on Friday. Again, this division is not part of the bankruptcy filing. The Securities and Exchange Commission says it will oversee an orderly transfer of this money from Lehman to some other brokerage company, a process that could potentially take weeks. But right now, again, you can do anything that you did a week ago. All of your regulators say your money is perfectly safe. And another backstop to this is something that's called the Securities Investor Protection Corporation, also known as SIPC. This is the brokerage equivalent of the FDIC, which, as we know, is the backstop for bank accounts. Now, SIPC doesn't guarantee your investment deposits, but it can make you whole in a situation like this if there is a liquidation. Right now, they're not looking at liquidation of these investment accounts. They're looking for another firm to take them over.
The FDIC, as we've learned this spring, insures depositors up to $100,000. What about SIPC? What do they cover?
Under SIPC, you have protections of up to $500,000, $100,000 of that in cash. But again, we're not there yet. Most likely your accounts will be transferred to another investment house.
Should I, if I have my money in a smaller but still sizable bank, start thinking about that one failing and getting taken over somehow?
Well, hard to predict the future, but certainly there is not a lot of health in the sector right now. But I think a lot of people never thought that Lehman could go down. And certainly Merrill was a big surprise to everybody today.
Let's talk about those Merrill Lynch customers. They have been bought by Bank of America. What does that mean in terms of my personal liquidity?
Much easier in this situation. It's just like a regular takeover. It'll take a while for it to go through. So until then, like always, you're a Merrill customer. You'll do business as usual. Eventually, your statements will start coming from Bank of America as the takeover continues. On the upside, you will be with now a gigantic bank with lots of money backing up your money. Your broker, though, may or may not keep his or her job, but basically not much else changes for you.
Tess Figland hosts our personal finance program. It's called Marketplace Money. Thank you, Tess.
Thanks, Kai.
Coming up, decoding labels for those with deadly allergies.
What's the difference between may contain peanuts and processed in a facility? Is the risk the same? We have no idea.
But first, let's do the numbers. If ever there was a day for the wah-wah trombones, this is it. The Dow Industrials plummeted 4.4%, 504 points to close at 10,917. The Nasdaq sheared off 3.6%, 81 points, finished at 2179. The S&P 500 lopped off 59 points, that's 4.7%, finished at 1192. That's its lowest close since October 2005. Financials obviously hit the floor. Whatever was left of Lehman Brothers is gone now. Shares in the bankrupt investment bank lost 94%, but if you hurry, they're still worth 21 cents. Citigroup gave back 15%. J.P. Morgan Chase unloaded more than 10%. Today, Merrill Lynch's shares traded almost flat, but its new owner, Bank of America, nosedived 21% amid concerns that it is taking on too big a burden. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. And by Gather.com, where friends keep up with the people, conversations, and moments that matter most. People are talking about business at Gather.com. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship. Online at kauffman.org. Each song we choose for the rundown on Marketplace is there for a reason. If you hear one that resonates, you can find out what it is on our website. Head to marketplace.org and check out the songs on the right side of the screen. There's also a link to an online store where you can buy each song.
From from the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. In Washington, the Labor Department releases consumer price index figures for August. The Federal Open Market Committee meets to discuss interest rates. And the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation holds a hearing on the consumer benefits of broadband service in areas such as education and telemedicine. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. Away from the Sturm und Drang on Wall Street today, there were some other things happening in the business world to tell you about. Best Buy is getting into digital music. The company said today it's going to buy Napster for almost $130 million. Napster, of course, is the company that first got record companies really worried about digital downloads. It's worth a mention that it has since gone legit, though. And oil tumbled more than $5 today. Crude closed at $95.71, the first time it's closed under $100 since March. As it happens, a company whose fortunes are closely tied to that price has a big birthday coming up. General Motors is celebrating its 100th anniversary. There's a bash planned for tomorrow in Detroit. But at the party, GM is expected to focus more on the future than on the past and focus on one very important car, too. From Michigan Radio, Dustin Dwyer reports.
The car is the Chevrolet Volt, a plug-in sedan that many say could open a new chapter in automotive history. GM unveiled a concept version at the Detroit Auto Show in 2007. The Volt is designed to go 40 miles using only electricity. After that, a small gas-powered engine kicks in to recharge the battery. GM unveils the production model tomorrow.
This is really a much different vehicle than anything we've ever seen in the past, and I think it's a sign of things to come.
That's analyst Eric Merkel of the consulting firm Crowe Horwath. He says the Volt will be on the leading edge of new electrically powered vehicles, and it could change people's perceptions about GM. Whether that happens or not, the hype has started. GM's already featured the Volt in TV ads, and last week, photos appeared unexpectedly on the internet. GM insists it was an accident. John Walkonowitz is with the economic research firm Global Insight.
GM has to make sure that the folks on Wall Street realize there are some neat tricks up their sleeve. They can't just go on current performance.
But despite the hype, the Volt won't hit showrooms for another year, and there are still questions about how much the battery will cost and how long it will last. Walkonowitz says those concerns don't seem to worry GM.
Yeah, sure, there's some probability there, but they must have assessed it and determined it was low enough not to worry about it.
Meanwhile, GM's nemesis Toyota is preparing a plug-in hybrid of its own. Toyota's been more secretive about its plans, but it's targeted a launch date of 2010, just about the same time the Volt comes out. I'm Dustin Dwyer for Marketplace.
There are about 12 million people in this country who have food allergies. If one or more of them live in your house, then you're probably familiar with the art of deciphering labels, trying to figure out which product may or may not contain eggs or nuts or fish or something else that's going to set off a reaction. But the different ways manufacturers list their ingredients makes figuring out whether something is safe to eat tricky at best. Tomorrow, the Food and Drug Administration is going to look into those voluntary labels and whether all the confusion is damaging confidence. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sarah Gardner reports.
You know the labels, the ones that say things like may contain traces of peanuts. The food isn't supposed to contain peanuts, but a small amount may have accidentally contaminated the food during manufacturing. I found a bunch of those warnings in my own cupboards. Says manufactured in a facility that uses wheat, milk, eggs, soy, and tree nuts. So what does that mean?
Right now, it's like the Wild West. Nobody knows what's going on.
Ann Munoz-Furlong is founder of the Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Network. Furlong says right now, the FDA doesn't regulate these kind of labels, and the language varies widely. She's seen everything from may contain the occasional nut to processed in a nutty facility. No pun intended. Furlong says the vague language may protect companies from liability, but it's confusing consumers.
What's the difference between may contain peanuts and processed in a facility? Is the risk the same? We have no idea.
You'll find skepticism about these warnings on food allergy blogs. Is it me, or are allergy labels getting way wackier? Asked a mother of two on the Nut-Free Mom blog. She cites a label on a sugar product warning of possible contamination from 8 food allergens, including shellfish. Recent surveys show some allergic consumers are beginning to ignore the warnings. Kim Lutz has a young son allergic to eggs, dairy, and walnuts. She says she pays attention to them.
On the flip side, I've talked to other families who say, oh, it's just they're just trying to cover themselves from litigation, and I'm sure it's perfectly fine because it's so vague, and they are feeding their kids those things.
That's a dangerous gamble, according to researchers, especially since some allergic reactions can be fatal. University of Nebraska food scientist Steve Taylor tested over 100 products with 2 differently worded peanut warnings. He found more of that allergen in the products labeled with the milder-sounding warning.
It's important for consumers to understand, allergic consumers, that all of these statements are intended to serve the same purpose. Please do not eat our products.
Taylor, though, does suspect some companies slap on a warning rather than spend money on good risk analysis. Tomorrow, activists will push the FDA to set some standards for these labels. Industry officials are expected to resist new mandates, but appear open to discussion. Some say they'd welcome more guidance. Allison Boder at the National Confectioners Association says candy makers want more data on what levels of allergen would trigger the need for labeling.
Right now we're operating more or less on a zero tolerance basis, meaning that any amount of allergen in that product is too much. And in that situation, the manufacturer is always going to err on the side of protecting the consumer.
Scientist Steve Taylor says his research should soon yield some useful risk data, at least for peanut allergies. Activists like Furlong hope tomorrow's hearing will lead to at least more standardized language and an end to some of the more absurd labels. Furlong recently spied a jar of peanuts with a warning label reading, "May contain peanuts." I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the American Public Transportation Association, committed to helping Americans save on gas and become energy independent at publictransportation.org. And by Putnam Investments, where a 529 plan can help meet your college savings goals. Details at putnam.com. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
These final thoughts to wrap things up for you today. The ratings agencies have gotten their fair share of criticism during the subprime mess. As the financial industry was seizing up, Moody's, Fitch, and Standard & Poor's all kept investment-grade ratings on bonds and securities that didn't really deserve them. Well, there is a development today that's not going to help their reputation any. Remember the news of the weekend that Lehman Brothers has gone broke. Analysts at S&P saw that and wasted no time at all. Right after the barn door closed, they downgraded Lehman's credit about as far as it can go. And back to the AIG story that Jeremy Hobson was telling us about. The New York Times reports today the Federal Reserve has hired Morgan Stanley to consult on what to do about the teetering insurance company. Not that anybody ought to read anything into this, but the Treasury hired Morgan Stanley for advice on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and came up with that $200 billion bailout package of last week. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media on this 15th of September. Remember that date. We're going to be talking about this one for a while. Today, after Lehman Brothers went under, the Dow heaved off 504 points, 4.4%. The Nasdaq fell 81 points, 3.6%. The S&P 500 lost 59 points. That is 4.7% there. Our producers include Caitlin Carroll, Megan Larson, and Fiona Ng. Marketplace was created by Jim Russell. Coming up tomorrow, more coverage of the aftershocks hitting Wall Street after Lehman and Merrill Lynch. Where do we go from here? I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
all over the country.
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.